Hi, and welcome to Generation Goat. I'm John Martin from SongSaveYourLife.com and ShWisten.com. And today, in the studio, I'm interviewing Pop Bubblegum Trash, otherwise known to our listeners as E. Christopher Clark. What do you prefer today? Pop Bubblegum Trash, Chris, E. Christopher Clark?
Mr. Trash is good for me.
Mr. Trash, all right. It's clearly a Kid Rock sidekick we've never met.
Yeah. 3'9" with it. No.
Yeah. So, just today, March 8th, you've dropped the first album in 11 years by Pop Bubblegum Trash since Ascent in 2000. Dream is but a shadow. What's that all about? What have you been up to?
Well, I think it's about time for some Pop Bubblegum Trash in the world.
Sure.
You know, I certainly listen to my share of it, so why not throw it out there into the world?
And I guess we thank you.
Well, you know, I should hope so. The world can never have too much music by untalented people.
That's true. But some people do very well at it, so, you know. No, that's cool. That's exciting. So, how did it come about? Like, I mean, what was the inspiration for this particular project?
Well, I think, you know, part of it is the RPM Challenge by it's a contest from The Wire, which is a Portsmouth newspaper. They started it. I think it's spread beyond them. And that is a challenge to record 10 songs or 35 minutes in the 28 days of February. Last year I did it, I provided lyrics for my friend Phil Kleiger to write the music to because I was lazy. Mm-hmm. This year I said, well, what the hell? There are plenty of iPhone instruments out there. I have a keyboard. Lots of things sort of came together, plus that peer pressure to allow me to sort of strike out on my own.
So is it just you doing the performance, or is there anybody else involved?
It's almost 100% me, yeah. There are three tracks... heavily featuring RT from Winterstar.
Who also put out a new album.
Yeah. Winterstar put an album just yesterday. Mm-hmm. That they did for the RPM Challenge. So he wrote, with some prompts from me, the music for two songs, West of the Reek and The Afterlife of a Salesman. And then he helped me take this kind of noise instrumental called My Lips May Promise and help me shape that. And he put the guitar on the, I was going to say the lead single. It's not really a single, but the whole album's up on Bandcamp. The one song that's up there for free to download is called We Don't Dream Like We Used To, and RT did the guitar on that.
All right. Well, maybe we should take a listen to
yeah?
We Don't Dream Like We Used To now.
Why not?
All right, so here it is. We Don't Dream Like We Used To from A Dream Is But a Shadow by Pop Bubblegum Trash. I'm here with Christopher Clark.
Mother taught us to dream on her in bed. Between once we slid back to work, no, she could never leave. Daddy ran out of gas, now he's in between underground. Make no sound, that's what he taught me.
Ask yourself if you dream like you used to dream.
Neither do we.
coming to pieces before our time. Signing Polaroids for the kids in line. We never dreamed this. We never defined how far from divine we'd be when we.
So that's not cheerful.
No, not at all.
That's not cheerful at all. That's you know, there's some stuff in there. I mean, it seems like a really nostalgic kind of track, but not in a happy sort of way, in a world let us down kind of way.
Yeah.
You know, there's the last verse about, you know, what we settled for, and but there's a curious lyric about signing Polaroids for kids. what are you imagining there? Like, what's going on?
You know, I So the lyrics
that actually sounds a little bit illegal. I'm just gonna throw it out there right now that it sounds a little suspect.
Well,
there you go. Don't tell your mom, but I signed it.
Hadn't thought about it that way.
Just throwing it out there.
Just throwing it out there. Yeah. So I spent most of the month working on the music with RT. He was doing a track for me, and I'd throw him something and say, how do I finish this? 15 years is a track I did all by myself, but I was like, I had no idea where to shape the how to shape the chorus verse. I had all the parts, but no idea what order to put them in. So I spent most of the month on the music, and then the lyrics, I had some rough ideas, but the lyrics all had to happen in like 24 hours so that I would have time to record the vocals, and then time to mix it in time for the deadline. So I'm sitting around, and I have the basic idea for a lot of these songs, but I get to a point where I'm blocked, because I've written, you know, now 7 songs in a row or so, and I'm running out of material.
Do you feel that need to, like, do all the work, like, during February, or, I mean, do you feel like, if you did another one, you could store up some song ideas over the year?
I think so, yeah. I mean, all the song titles... came from random snatches of conversation, or things that I overheard. We Don't Dream Like We Used To came from listening to a podcast. Mm-hmm. A complete throwaway line, a guy saying, I don't dream like I used to, which had nothing to do with the theme of the song. But
sure.
So, yeah, I could build stuff up, and I know for a fact that some people actually do their lyrics ahead of time. They don't consider the lyric part of it cheating to do it like before February 1st. I really wanted to see if I could do it all at once.
Sure.
And since I never answered the question, that lyric about the Polaroids for the kids in line comes from The Wrestler.
Okay.
Which, during that 24 hours, I took 2 hours. I took a break, and I was like, maybe this will inspire me. I had it from Netflix, and I watched it, and there's a scene in The Wrestler where Mickey Rourke's character goes to the VFW with other... I don't know if they're other wrestlers or other kind of, for lack of a better word, has-beens.
Sure.
And they're sitting there, and he doesn't have the sort of 8x10 photos that somebody who's in their prime might have. He has a Polaroid camera. And so he's literally, you know, for the kids in line, snapping a Polaroid and then signing it.
Man,
and
rocking.
Selling it for $5 or $10. So, you know. Oh, I'm deep.
Yeah, no, that's cool. it's nice to have so many found elements that work out for you.
Mm.
Now I know, okay, so you said that, so RT does some guitar work and mm-hmm. you've got some keyboard on there that you've done and some computer generated stuff.
Yeah.
You said you used a bit of the iPhone or yeah. iPad for this. What was that about?
Yeah, well, part of what made me, you know, 11 years is a long time to wait, given I'm not primarily...
Well, depending on who you ask.
I'm not primarily a musician, but so I was looking for ways that I could be more involved in the music, because that album in 2000, Ascent, was almost entirely loops from acid music and acid DJ and the various sort of acid products that Sonic Foundry was putting out. And I said, I really want to do most of it myself. I started seeing these videos of real bands sort of as gimmick doing like on a subway car.
Yeah. Or Weezer did a song featuring the iPad and
yeah.
Squeeze was on Late Night and all the random bands.
And the Las Gorillaz album was almost entirely iPhone and iPad apps. So I saw the one that really did it for me, though, because I wanted there to be more guitar on this. And inevitably, a lot of the guitar came from RT, but two songs worth of the guitar came from this app called iShred, which reminded me, reminds me, of this little plastic gizmo that I had, that I didn't have, I wanted to buy back in the day from the music store in downtown Haverhill when I was going to college. This is after our band broke up. I was like, I'm going to learn to play guitar. And I was like, maybe not. I'm a little lazy.
Well, if you want to be a rock and roll star, you've got to learn electric guitar. It's true.
Yeah. So I thought about getting this thing, which is basically a plastic contraption you put onto the neck of the guitar that would, with one button press, allow you to play a chord. And so this iShred app does the same thing except digitally. So you can line it up with... whatever chord combinations you want. I think you can get about 8 chords on there. Or you can actually have it give you something like further up on the neck of the guitar so you could do individual notes if you were doing heavy metal, solos type stuff. So I saw that, and then I went out and looked at some of the songs that I really liked and found their chord progressions online. And just threw... not all of the chords, but a couple of the chords into this thing and started strumming.
Hmm.
So I used that to create a couple of the songs. I used my keyboard. I finally, after many years of having this keyboard collect dust, bought a MIDI interface. Because my MIDI interface was from way back on the PC where I had, I think it was a parallel port.
Yeah.
So I needed to buy something that had a USB end to it. So a lot of the bass lines came out of that, and then various little iPhone apps. Loopseek is a sort of sequencer that you can't really go wrong with. I wanted to be able to do a lot more of it myself.
So it sounds like, I mean, you think of these iPod apps as having a lot more potential to be serious contenders as opposed to kind of gimmicky in a lot of ways.
Yeah, there are a couple of them that I kind of went nuts and spent, I said... In terms of budget for this, I said, sure. I'll spend like $15 or $20 on these things and see what I come up with. And there were a few that I'd never really used.
Mm-hmm.
There's one that in theory looked pretty cool called Voice Band. The idea being that you hum or sing or whatever into the microphone and it turns that into your bass line or your power chords or your whatever. And I never was able to make that work very well. But one time... when you and I went and hung out with Andy, actually, I forget, that was, we just were going out for drinks and pizza, and we're gonna go bowling.
Bowling,
yeah.
And pizza, and we ended up in the bar in Davis Square. Yeah.
And so, while we were on the train, I sort of I turned Voice Band on and held it over to the side of the door and just let it record, and it turned into this crazy noise thing. So even the ones that were kind of gimmicky, if you find some weird way to use them,
sure.
they could be interesting. But yeah, they have a lot more potential than I expected them to, especially when you run them through a filter and you actually take time to play with what comes out of it. Because I think the actual stuff that comes out of iShred still sounds pretty damn artificial, but if you run it through an amp in GarageBand, you can make it sound not like a guitar, but like something a little bit closer to.
And it seems like Apple is really kind of pushing the idea that the iPad is a useful platform for musicians. I mean, GarageBand is going to be available on the iPad too, and you know, there are all kinds of sheet music apps now for, for musicians that will kind of follow along and change the pages for you and that kind of thing.
Yeah, they seem to be realizing the potential of it. I mean, good on them for finally doing it, because I think the one of the biggest markets for iPad has been the music apps. And now they're finally, with this new GarageBand for iPad, going to let people do their thing. It's only 8 tracks, which is, you'd have to eventually bring it over to the computer if you were going to get real sophisticated, but amount of stuff that, in their presentation, they made the point that the Beatles recorded Sgt. Pepper with 4 tracks.
4 tracks.
But but I bet you there was some element of being able to mix down tracks into, was there? I mean, I mean,
later in the Beatles' career, there's a bit of kind of, you know, tape editing and kind of moving stuff over. But and then, of course, getting in something to output sound into the room where they're recording the next 4 tracks, which is something that happens on, not Sgt. Pepper so much, but it happens on Strawberry Fields Forever. Mm-hmm. That noise bit at the end is a lot of loop played into the room kind of thing. And I mean, early Bowie stuff, if you play, like, Space Oddity and you want to have fun, you know, turn it all the way to the left and you'll get the low vocal, and turn it all the way to the right and you'll get the high harmony. And it's a really crazy kind of thing to do. I know that when Bowie put out a collection of that stuff, they did a mix of it where they brought them both up to equal playing field. It's crazy stuff. So, there's a lot of potential there, definitely, totally.
So I just say, I'll be curious with that app to see what you can do, what tricks people come up with to turn an 8-track into something.
There's a lot of potential there. I mean, it's definitely not as limited as it sounds. I mean, I don't know, maybe Trent Reznor probably would have an annoying time with it, but
yeah, probably. I'd be curious to see what I just read that he's finishing up a new How to Destroy Angels. He's also got the Girl with a Dragon Tattoo score he's working on, but that the next thing is a new Nine Inch Nails record. So,
and which is, you know, obviously one of your musical influences. Going back over a long time. What else? I mean, I don't know if Trent does directly, but what else informs this album? Like, for,
well, I think even more so than that album back in 2000, this one was, I kind of embraced the stuff that worked on that one, which was dancier, poppier stuff, but then also allowed it to go darker. One of the things that I think was interesting in the Genesis, I'm not even sure if this answers the question, but I was asking RT, this is February 3rd or 4th, you know, I still have plenty of time, but I was panicked because I hadn't come up with a whole song. And I gave him a few of the tracks from way back in 2000. I said, "What would you do with this?" I want a post-apocalyptic road trip song. And he came up with "West of the Reek," and that helped me realize, like, it's got some of those sort of dancier techno kind of stuff under it, but with the real dark edges. So it feels like a poppier Nine Inch Nails at times, I think. And that's ultimately where I think I'm going for.
So more Pretty Hate Machine era.
Yeah. Kind of what would have happened if
some of those Adamant songs he did.
Yeah. What he kept going with, the sort of Pretty Hate Machine or, like, the hidden tracks on Broken, if he'd kept going in that direction and maybe... you know, there's some noise stuff on this, but not as much as you get on, like, the Downward Spiral or the Fragile or anything like that.
So Bandcamp, what is it that you what drew you to Bandcamp? It seems to be the place of choice for
I think
people doing the RPM challenge.
Part of it was that I'd seen Winterstar, RT's band, do it a couple of times, and I've also bought a whole bunch of stuff off of Bandcamp recently. The last couple of Amanda Palmer things I bought off Bandcamp. Some of the Australian artists that she's touring with, I found, the Jane Austen argument found on Bandcamp. Mm-hmm. It seems to me, it's from the artist end, it seems like a pretty fair model. I know, like, Andy, our friend there in the Pluto Tapes, he puts his stuff out through TuneCore, which I know puts you in many more places, iTunes, Napster, all those places, but requires you to pay this sort of upfront fee. Bandcamp isn't making you pay any upfront fee. It's getting it on the back end when people purchase it. Or if you decide to give stuff away for free, you can give X number of things away for free before you have to upgrade to allow, for bandwidth purposes and stuff. It seems like it's a pretty easy interface. It reminds me of mp3.com, which is where I was distributing back in 2000.
Rest in peace.
Yes. With the exception that it's slightly less social. I mean, it pretty much relies, but there again, like, it knows what it does well and does that. And then it hooks into Facebook and things like that for the social part.
What I like about Bandcamp, I think, particularly, is that there's a standard format, to the pages. And, I mean, while some people may be like, oh, I want to be creative, I want to whatever, it's really nice when you're browsing through bands, because you can browse it by genre as well. And it's really nice to just, like, okay, that's the art, this is the music, this is the whatever. And all of the music is usually embeddable somewhere else, which is really nice for me as a music blogger to be able to get stuff off Bandcamp right away onto my page. And it's nice. I like it.
I do like the uniformity of the format. I think, it keeps it from becoming MySpace.
Yeah, pretty much. So it's a nice format. They seem like good folk. So actually, we should throw out the address. Where can people find?
I know for sure that people can get their popbubblegumtrash.bandcamp.com, and probably by the time people hear this, the DNS will be propagated all over the internet, and they can just go to popbubblegumtrash.com.
Cool. And it's $3.
$3, yeah, and that first song, We Don't Dream Like We Used To, is free if people want to download that.
And the lyrics are up there too, so...
Yeah, the lyrics are up there too, and if people download, they get... The liner notes, which features some sort of, doesn't feature the lyrics, but features the sort of photographic accompaniment and the credits. There, one thing I've done a lot of, and I think my wife, Stephanie, has looked at me kind of weird over the year, like, why are you taking a picture of that? I've taken lots of pictures of stuff that without not featuring human beings, whereas most of the time I'm taking snapshots of family and whatever. But then we'll be looking through the photos, and there'll be this random snapshot of all the shells on a beach.
I get that a lot. I take pictures of, like, trees against the twilight, or, the corner of a building, or, just stuff. And people are like, so on your trip, you were apparently blindfolded?
Yes. Yeah, well, so I wanted to gather some of those that set the mood for what I was doing with the songs, at least in my mind.
Nice.
So there's liner notes included in there. And I loved that part of Bandcamp. I wasn't sure that it was going to do that. I thought I might have to upload it on my webpage, but that comes in the download.
Awesome. So, we've been talking for a while. Is there another track you want to hear?
Yeah, it's a tough choice to pick which one. When we do the RPM listening party, the one people will hear is We Don't Dream Like We Used To. I'm tempted to throw out one of the ones that I did with RT, because I think they're both pretty stellar.
And he's probably the only person listening.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. And since he's the one that's listening, and I will probably only listen to it once when I put this all together, I'll throw out the one that he likes better.
All right. Which tell is us about that one.
West of the Reek, which I kind of said before. I said I wanted a sort of post-apocalyptic road song, and the whole story of the album comes from a few different places. One of the things behind the album was I wanted to write songs from the perspective of the girls that I'd written songs about in previous eras, because I've written lots of angry songs about girls that I'd gone out with.
Sure.
I wanted to write some songs
from... But they're all dead now.
I wanted to write some songs from their perspective. And every time I tried to do that over the last 11 years, it just didn't work. So I threw them into this crazy story where in that first song, the dude gives up. And then the second song, the second song is Hen Party at the Last Fight on Earth, where all the women are celebrating that the men are all dead. Someone comes out and says to them, they're actually not all dead. This is not what it seems. And
along with that, you'd have to assume productions of Liz Estrada would drop right off at that point. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you there.
That's fine. So they get sent on a quest to rescue this one guy from himself, basically. And that's where West of the Reek comes in. This dude says, you know, stay north of Wonderland. I'm going to script the lyrics. But basically invokes the various fairy tale lands that we're all sort of familiar with. And that gave me the entrance into who these girls were. So the ex-girlfriends became fairy tale characters who are wandering.
So you were watching a lot of Katy Perry videos.
Yes.
That's what you're saying to us, actually.
Yes.
So is Snoop Dogg on the track?
Snoop Dogg is not on that track, but there is a rap on one of the other tracks that I just checked on Facebook and Twitter. I was getting some love for the rapping on
some
one of the other
tracks. Some post-apocalyptic gin and juice.
Yeah.
What
you're
saying.
You know, not on this one. This one's a little dark, you know.
All right. Well, let's check it out. West of the Reek, Pop, Bubblegum, Trash. There we go.
Thank you.
So, there we are. That's the rest of the week. Nicely done. Mr. Thanks. Trash, anything to say before we,
No. I think I've spoken enough.
Well, thanks for being our guest and Generation Goat. Remember, people, you can go to popbubblegumtrash.bandcamp.com or possibly popbubblegumtrash.com to check out the album. It's only $3. Come on, help a brother out.
Yes.
And, cool. Thanks
for coming. I got three kids to feed. No, just two.
So, next up on Generation Goat, looks like we'll be doing Generation Goat number 20.
Yes.
With me in studio is E. Christopher Clark of GeekForce5.com. Hey, Chris.
Hey, John.
Sorry you came late. We just had Mr. Trash in from Pop Bubblegum Trash.
Nice, dude. I'm a big fan.
He stinks. I'm not supposed to really make fun of the artist, but dude, I'm sorry, it's a little reeky in here.
Oh, right now. Okay. All right. Well, I thought you were saying that he's like his music.
Oh, it's okay. I mean...
But the B.O.
Good Lord.
Good Lord, yeah. Yeah, well, you know, it's that hanging out with Katy Perry, right? I caught the end of it, right?
Yeah.
Katy Perry and... No, well, Snoop Dogg more than Katy Perry.
I don't know. I always figure, like, Snoop probably smells pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like, kind of a mixture of, like, pot and peppermint.
That... Yeah, you know, that's... I'm going to write that down. I'm going to send it over to Mr. Trash, and he might make a song out
there'll
of it.
There'll be a B-side
by
the end of the week.
By the end of the week, yeah.
So, so he was here, and we were talking about whatever. I don't know,
his bullshit.
But we've been up to stuff.
Yeah.
We haven't goated in a little while, not since we had Andy visiting us.
Yeah.
You notice he's not here today?
No.
Yep. That happened.
Yeah.
No, we are actually going to see Mr. Andy this evening. We're going to see Telekinesis tonight.
Yeah.
The Bears. And if you are listening to this in the future, you should come down because it's going to be a rockin' time.
Mm-hmm.
It's Telekinesis and The Love Language and a band from Boston called Slow Dim. And this is apparently their first show ever.
Wow. I didn't know about the third band. I
didn't either until I looked it up. I'm like, who are they? And I looked on their webpage. First show ever.
Any names from other Boston acts or...
No, nothing that I recognized, but, you know, I've been out of the country, so, apparently it's just a thing, so,
All
right, whatever, man.
Pretty cool.
So, yeah, if you're listening in the future, head on down. We're gonna get there at, like, I don't know, 8:15, 8:30, so, you know, just check us out, and, yeah.
That'll be fun. I mean, you know, it's good to see, Mr. Hicks every once in a while.
It is.
Yeah. Every once in a while, though.
Once in a while. Most of the time, he seems kind of annoyed.
Like, yeah, well, you know, he is our more talented friend.
Yeah. Oh, well. No, I called him at work today, and I felt really bad about it. So, again, future Andy. Totally sorry. Yeah, I called him at work to schedule stuff, and he was just like, I'm at work.
Yeah.
I know. But I have no other way to do this. Anyway, that's really boring. So, so we're doing that, but no Andy today, just us. And we had an adventure. We had an adventure on Sunday. We went to see Kevin Smith's... Red State, which is not coming out till October 19th.
Yeah, and, so you know, fuck all you guys.
Yeah, we saw it, and we paid 10 times more to see it.
Yes, we did.
Kind of like the last time, we were actually at the world premiere of Dogma. I think.
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
we were the first cats to see it in Red Bank. So,
I think maybe now, like that. Memory hadn't occurred to me. I mean, I think there may have even been a couple of effects that weren't totally finished.
There was a title card at one point.
Yeah.
It's just like, monster does thing.
Right, yeah, the poop monster,
the
Golgothan. It's the second time we've gone and seen a sort of premiere. I mean, this one had premiered.
But not last night, man. What we saw was a fully finished, Sunday night, what we saw was a fully finished flick.
And it was really good. It's a big leap forward for him career-wise.
Totally.
And now, of course, he's going to make one more movie and retire, which...
Yeah, but seems... that's all right. Go out on a high note.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, what can we say about the movie? What we should say is that if you want to see the trailer, you can go to coopersdell.com.
Yes.
CoopersDell.com.
Mm-hmm.
And you can check out the trailer there. But it's, it's hard to say what the movie was. I mean, there's some dark comedy, there's some horror, there's some kind of social satire, there's,
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes in a few different places without feeling like it's all over the place. Yeah. Because it's kind of an orderly transition between genres.
Yeah, and I mean, that's what Kevin said, right? There were a whole bunch of different kinds of movies he always wanted to make. He didn't get to make them, so he made this movie and just stuck them all in there.
Yeah,
and,
which makes you wonder what the next... Is the next one, like, the movie he's always wanted to... I don't know. Yeah. Like, what's the next one going to be like?
We'll find it next year.
But this one was... It's really interesting. It lulls you in by beginning as a sort of Kevin Smith comedy with these three kids talk... Well...
We shouldn't give too much away.
Yeah. We shouldn't give too much away. But, I mean, it begins as sort of a Kevin Smith comedy with three kids.
It turns into a road trip comedy.
Yeah. With three kids talking about sex, you know?
Yeah.
And then moves on from there. But I was going to say, it actually doesn't begin there. It begins a little bit before there and not giving anything away. But it begins with something that's slightly disturbing, or at least some imagery that's slightly disturbing, which maybe is part of why you don't feel completely surprised when it turns from the sort of kids road trip comedy into something else. Because we've got that sort of foreshadowing of what might be coming.
Yeah, it's interesting too, because our villains in the movie aren't the usual villains in a horror movie. I mean, they're effectively the Fred Phelps people, the God hates fags people who protest at military funerals and whatever. And,
right.
You know, say that God did Katrina because apparently we let Ellen be on the air, and you know, whatever.
I think if God did Katrina, he did Katrina because of Katy Perry. But
it's possible. You should take that up with that Mr. Trash dude. But yeah, no, it's true, and you know, they're horrible people. There's just no real excuse for that sort of thing. And but those are effectively our villains in the movie. Yeah. They've decided it's not really given any way to say that they're taking it to the next level, and they decided to just go ahead and kill the people that they're against.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so it's interesting, and the whole movie kind of revolves around a siege of their complex, so, for various reasons. And
and some interesting people turn up in that siege that, well, I think
Kevin
you do
Pollack
see...
Kevin Pollack is in there.
Kevin Pollack
is in there.
Yeah, the John Goodman, I was going to say, you sort of don't know John Goodman's coming, but he is in, like, one shot of the trailer.
Yeah, I forgot. And so when he came, I was like, wow, it's John Goodman, like everybody else in the cinema.
Right.
Well, theater.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was quite exciting.
He's got some good lines there in the middle. It's a great line. I'm giving too much. There's a great line between him and his wife there in the middle of the film.
It's quite exciting. And I mean, it was great. It was a great experience. And I mean, I think people should go and see the movie. Not just because I like Kevin and, like, I think it's a good idea, but I mean, it's a really interesting experiment in movie making. I mean, this is effectively, you know, it wasn't a crowdsourced financing to make the movie, but effectively everything that's happening now is crowdsourced.
Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, would the movie have found its funding if he hadn't started the buzz machine years ago about how it was a movie that was going to... I would love to know, and I'm sure that we'll see a documentary at some point, if John Gordon, his producer friend, didn't go into the... Because they are privately financed. I don't know through who or how many.
Probably Gaddafi.
But to sort of to go into Gaddafi, and he's like, look, all the kids on the internet, they are interested.
Yeah.
I mean,
Muammar's a bit crazy, so, you know.
Yeah. That could have played a part in it. Yeah, but so it's not crowdfunded. He did, in the Q&A portion, talk about that happened after the film, about how he would have loved to have done it crowdfunding, but some guy scared him off of it.
Yeah.
And I think he's alluded to the fact that he'd like to use potentially a crowdfunding option to help other people out maybe at some point.
I mean, so he's retiring after the next movie, which is Hit Somebody, which is his Wayne Gretzky movie that he's doing.
Right.
And then he did say, well, he was interested in producing other people's movies or helping other people find their funding or whatever.
Right.
And it's interesting to see him coming back around to indie film and
saying,
you know, like, this is really what I want to do. And, you know, there's kind of a certain poetry to the fact that this movie is coming out on the 17th anniversary of Clerks in a way. You know, it's kind of sweet in a way. You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that we've joked, not here necessarily today, but like...
We don't joke on this podcast.
No. Well, nothing's funny.
It's a very serious
intentionally
podcast.
Yeah. No, I mean, we've joked about, like, his turning into a stoner and what that's done to him. But I think it has made him sort of appreciate the poetry of things maybe a little bit more. It was very poetic to go to Sundance, and his whole thing about having the chance to go with a studio or go on his own again, and this time choosing the other path was interesting. And to make sure that they hit that October 17th. He is sort of appreciating the big picture of things in that particular way that stoners probably can. Maybe. But then some of his other ideas are a little bit wacky.
Yeah, it's a little weird to be launching an online radio network at this point. But hey, dude's happy.
Yeah, I mean...
And they do better than we do, so can't really say much.
It's interesting, like, that he's doing it as a... It's not paid, it's all going to be advertising. And I wonder how long that'll... I mean, like... So he's got an audience, right? And lots of people download Smodcast. Does that go away when he's not producing films anymore?
I don't know. I mean, you know, it's one of the things he said kind of offhand, which was, you know, like, oh, well, this year it's probably just going to be audio. Next year we might add video, and then we can, like, produce our own TV show if we wanted to or whatever. I mean, that's, you know, kind of an interesting...
Yeah, it was an interesting hint to have dropped. Because I think he's also... It was a tweet not that long ago where somebody said, you know, what about... I don't know if it was What About Clerks 3 or what about bringing back those characters? And he's like, why do it as a film when you could do it as a TV series? And that combined with that offhand statement, I was like, well, maybe he is thinking about that. It seems like he's thinking about a lot of things.
Yeah. Maybe a return of the Clerks animated series.
Something. That could be... Those things are classic. I mean, the episode with Judge Reinhold, which turns into... like, has the Japanimation ending, is just... It's fantastic.
They were fun, and it was very odd that they were on my TV on a Saturday.
Yeah, they were, and on ABC of course they. Where else would they have been? Because Miramax was owned by Disney, and ABC was owned by Disney.
Although ABC is apparently shopping a pilot for a show. I just saw yesterday it was Something Christian Bitches.
It's Something Christian
that's
Bitches.
That's just never gonna happen, you know.
Something Christian. So that was
like stupid or something, but like.
So it's not Something Christian Bitches.
No.
Okay.
No comma. Yeah, like, that's interesting for a network that typically aims at, like, middle America.
Yeah.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. That's why, like, I'm also because they're all sort of related. They all go back to Disney. I was mystified.
Yeah, ABC is partly owned by Disney, right?
But, yeah, and I'm still kind of mystified by Disney's purchase of Marvel Comics. Like, I am and I'm not. Like, they want to hit, and maybe this goes into what's going on with the ABC thing too. Like, they want to hit more of the male audience, right?
Yeah.
ABC found its stride again with its television series with Lost, which maybe appealed. I don't know. Maybe skewed a little more male, at the same time as Desperate Housewives, which definitely skews more female. Like, and so maybe now they're looking for that balance again, which is what Disney was looking for when, Disney itself and the Disney animated movies definitely skew towards girls, and they didn't have anything that was skewing towards boys.
Yeah,
which I guess explains the Marvel thing.
It's a very unusual sort of thing. Although now we're going to get letters from women who read comics.
Yeah. Well, I'm saying skews. It's not skew, which is an interesting word.
Moving swiftly.
Yes, along. Moving swiftly along. Stop those letters.
Yeah,
we'll redeem ourselves
somehow.
No, put down the pen.
Probably not via podcast.
Yes.
Frankly, this is about the level of discourse we got. So, just deal with it. But so the Kevin Smith thing was really cool, and I mean, the question and answer was about half an hour longer in the movie. Mm-hmm. And of course, he spent 45 minutes on the first question.
Yeah.
Which, if you've seen any of the DVDs, which I know you have,
right,
that's about par for the course.
Yeah.
In fact, I think the third DVD, he asked one question.
Yeah, he got asked one question, and then
that was the DVD.
Yeah,
like that was it.
Or that was Too Fat for 40. And we had this conversation the other day. I feel like there's a one in the middle that I looked up, and I don't know who produced it because it's not on. It's not. I think someone else produced it. Like, it got produced somewhere by some company that's not affiliated with Kevin. Maybe it was in Red Bank. I don't know. But, yeah, I feel like there's a middle one. But, yeah, that one, Too Fat for 40, one question gets asked, and he just riffs for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
He's like, thanks.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
It's pretty crazy.
I mean, he's definitely found his stride as a sort of on-stage storyteller and comedian. I remember thinking, an evening with Kevin, like, what's he doing? The first time I bought that first DVD set, and I was like, oh, that's what he's doing. Like, it's kind of stand-up, but with stories that aren't always funny, like, they, you know, or elements of them that aren't always funny. That's the other thing I wonder, like, is he going to run out of material at a certain point? I mean, he kind of addressed that in that podcast about the Smodcast internet radio, like, the fact that they might run out of material if he and Jen, if they didn't do anything but record all day, like,
right.
But is he going to run out of material, like, when he stops making flicks and stuff?
I don't know. I doubt it.
Yeah.
That's where the weed comes in.
Yeah, the weed does. I mean, some of the shit that he talks about with Scott is just...
I think they should make a half hour of Shecky. And it's just him yelling at Shecky for half an hour.
Yeah, that would be a good April Fool's Day episode. Yeah. Just him yelling at Shecky.
Everybody needs one of those. Yeah. But, so it was a cool adventure. And, of course, this concert tonight, it's almost like we're, you know, friends.
Yeah, almost. You know, it's not like I avoided you for 2 weeks or...
No, you didn't disappear at all. Hang out with Mr. Trash for 2 weeks.
Yeah, Mr. Trash and I were hanging out a little bit. He wanted me to guest vocals on the record, but...
Mm. I should point out to people listening to this podcast that you would have had a Generation Go in the middle of February if not for Herr Clark over here. So if you have angry letters, send them to Chris.
Right. Yep.
And, it's all Chris. I was actually perfectly happy to go. In fact, I even have a goat that I recorded solo that was ready to go at one point.
Wow. See, we should... I wonder if that one will surface at some point.
It may. Depends how long between goats. Mm. But yeah, actually, it's so tonight.
Because really, that was the ultimate kicker, was that at some point in February, I said to you, I would really like to goat more often.
Yeah, you were like, oh, it really should be a once a week thing, or maybe once every other week, but if it can't be that often, then I should go and do my own podcast. And I'm like, all right, well, I'm ready, man. And then you were like, oh, I'm going to disappear for 2 weeks.
Yeah, well, you know.
Okay.
Everyone in the family got a little bit sick.
Family is zombies now.
Yeah, there was one sickness after another and trips to the emergency room and all
that's
sorts
why
of...
Chris is recording this episode from inside a plastic bubble.
Yeah. So there was lots of sickness. Maybe we can, I don't know. Are we destined to not make it a weekly or bi-weekly thing?
Bi-weekly is certainly achievable.
Yeah.
I don't know about weekly. Yeah. We'd have to see. We'd have to actually have lives or something. Well, you have a life. Yeah.
Hmm.
But it's worth a shot. If there were, you know, audience demand for such a thing.
Yeah, that would be helpful. It would be good to know if somebody was out there thinking, I really want this on a regular basis, or are they out there thinking that it's a nice little surprise when it just shows up in their iTunes or wherever they listen to podcasts.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, we'll have to see. But it's interesting, like, you know, I was thinking about hanging out today, and this tonight, this concert, apparently there are going to be 6 of us, and...
Hmm.
That's the largest posse I've brought to a concert in 16 years.
Jesus Christ.
Usually it's like 2, maybe 3, maybe 4. But
I'm trying to think of the largest posse I've been a part of. I think other than before this, maybe there were 4. There were 4 of us for Nine Inch Nails and Jane's Addiction a couple summers ago.
Mm-hmm.
And then there... Oh, I'm not going to talk about that.
I
have to see if I could do the math. No, you know what? I'm good. I don't have to talk about that because there were only 4 of us then.
Tell us about the Wilson Phillips concert.
No, it's not a Wilson Phillips. It was a Kiss concert.
Wow.
Not Kiss the band, but Kiss the
Kiss tribute band.
No. Kiss the radio station.
Kiss 108 FM.
Yeah.
The top 10 radio station.
Yeah, it was in 2001, shortly after my...
So, was Backstreet, in fact, back?
No, Backstreet was not back. That year, Aerosmith was on the bill, and I want to say Sarah McLachlan was on the bill. I don't know what she would have been supporting, so maybe she wasn't. Bare Naked Ladies, I think, were there.
These are all artists that do not feature on Kiss 108 FM.
They don't. Well, back then they'd feature like their hit single and only that single. Even after they'd put out three other singles from the album, they'd still be playing that one.
Right. Fair enough.
But there was an equal supply of good bands. No, I shouldn't say that. There were like three or four good bands at the end of the night that played like two songs each, and then like all the shitty bands you could possibly think of playing like three or four songs, five songs.
So how was Silverchair? Candlebox, all right.
This is 2001. This is not 1996 or 7.
I don't know. They might have still been touring the Kiss 108 FM circuit at that point. It's kind of like when I was living in England and I was looking through the paper on Sunday and I'm like, Krista Berg, why do I? What's the Lady in Red dude? He sold out a stadium? Oh my god. And like when I went to see the Pumpkins reunite in Paris, and Neil and I went with my friend Neil, and we went to check out where it was the night before, so we, you know, like made sure to get there on time the next day, and it was a real pain to find. And we got there and we saw all these like loading cases on the sidewalk. Like, oh, that's gotta be the place. Went over, like, wow, is this the Pumpkins equipment? And we looked down and it's like property of the Pet Shop Boys. And we're like, Pet Shop Boys. And Neil looked at me, he's like, yeah. Now, Neil is a big guy. He's from Manchester. He's into, like, rock. And he's like, yeah. I'm like, it's the Pet Shop Boys. I can't believe they're still alive. And Neil's like, they're a good band. They sell a lot of records over here. Oh. Have you heard the phrase big in Europe? Yeah, that was kind of, yeah, poor Neil. So I feel bad for the rest of the night for me. But Pet Shop Boys was the last time that's ever going to happen. Yeah, so you never know. People might still be touring the Kiss 108 FM circuit.
Yeah,
we might be able to go check out Milli Vanilli right now. Well, the reincarnated Milli Vanilli.
One of them's dead, right?
One of them died of shame, I think. No, suicide, I think. Or pills or something.
Same difference.
Yeah. No, but the other one, like, apparently, Fabrice, I think, is the one that's still alive. Yes, I know that. And he decided to, like, become a real musician and, like, put out a record. And,
like, that's like Mr. Trash decided to become a real musician.
Yeah, he just hasn't done it yet. Unlike the Milli Vanilli guy. But yeah, so this is, like, the largest group in half my lifespan that we're bringing to a concert tonight. And that's just crazy. And, like, the other thing, like, last night I went, the new R.E.M. album came out. It's really good. You should go listen to it right now. I think actually one or two of the tracks is free on iTunes, so go look. And it came out last night, and I thought, oh, what the hell, you know, go to Bull Moose, because they stay up until 12:30, and like, the last time I got an album at midnight was, ironically, about 16 years ago, when Wild Mood Swings came out by The Cure, and I went with the illustrious Ken Mills.
Ken Mills lives.
So, yeah, crazy. Like, yeah. All the stuff that's coming up.
Was the show, I don't know if you said this, that shows how well I've been paying attention. Was the show that we brought, like, the six or seven people to the last time, was that the R.E.M. show at the Garden?
It was R.E.M. at, it was the first concert at the Fleet Center.
Oh, right, when it's, yes, so
Fleet Center. And, they played a bunch of new songs, because this was, it was the Monster Tour, but it was late in the Monster Tour, and during the Monster Tour, R.E.M. had been, writing a bunch of new songs, which would eventually become New Adventures in Hindsight.
Right.
And
where they ripped off the chord progression for Never Forget.
Well, yeah, they did kind of steal that. And, no, that's on Up. That's on Up. That they
It's
in Why Not Smile. They clearly ripped this off. And, so they played Departure that night, which is the fourth track on New Adventures for the first time, and that's the one they used on the album.
That's the one with the, is that the one with the guitar that sort of droning is the wrong word. Is that the one with the sort of repeated guitar, kind of almost feedbacky thing? No, maybe it's different.
No, Departure's more of a standard kind of.
Okay. There's one that they were playing, I remember, and I'm hard pressed to even think of.
You might be thinking of Leave, which is kind of that siren sound.
Leave. And it's not. New Adventures in Hi-Fi, it was not the Never Forget ripoff. New Adventures in Hi-Fi features one song that when we played it, we swore Andy had joined R.E.M.
It's
like,
true.
There was one song that sounded like exactly like him. Which, at least the first like few lines of it.
We cannot get through a podcast without praising Andy.
No, we can't.
We should just rename the podcast Praising Andy.
Praising Andy? Yeah. But see,
Chasing Andy is too close to.
But we know that we're making him uncomfortable. He is one of our listeners, and we're him uncomfortable every time we do it. So
it's pretty good, actually. We could just take a minute and appreciate the sight of Andy. I'm making that Andy face. He does. He has a particular face when you say, "I really like that song of yours," and he goes.
That's usually a way to get.
If song is stupid.
If you want that song never to be played again and never to exist, tell Andy that you
love
it.
That's true. See, also 6 o'clock and sleeping. Which was a song that when Andy wrote it for our little band, everybody went, "Wow, what a great song!" Mm. And then he went, "Oh, really?" And then we never heard it again.
There was a song.
And then like a week later, it's like, "Yeah, that song's stupid." Like,
there was a song you loved that he played at one practice, maybe even like a post Jeff and Andy leaving.
Yeah, yeah, he called it "Graveyard Song." And yeah, it did parts of it. I think became something else, but I really liked that song. It had a really great kind of chorus, and I really liked it. I could sing it right now if I wanted to. I remember it very well, and I liked it so much, and I never saw the light of day. So if you're listening out there, Andy, I'll make a deal with you. Cut me a rough cut of that song so I can have it for my very own, and Chris and I will say nothing nice about you at all for 6 months.
Okay.
Which might be like 2 episodes. But right. We will totally not say anything nice about you in public.
That
in fact,
makes
we will even talk shit about you. But
that makes me think back on like, and it's, this sound makes me sound slightly obsessive or very obsessive. I do often sit there and wonder, like, if we were to get all of the various videotapes and audio tapes that each of us have possession of, like, would we find random things that we thought were completely lost?
Probably.
I mean, because I had a tape of our first show with Andy for a long time, and that had some good stuff, some bad stuff, plenty of bad stuff, but some good fun stuff on it.
Do you still have it?
No, I think it got, because it got, the tape went through the tape deck, got ruined, and I think I tossed it at a certain point.
Dang it.
Because it was so
unwild. The archives. I know I have video archives.
Yeah. A lot of them, because we would, and it seems weird. I mean, like,
we documented our crappy high school band like we were Nazis.
But
it's
we did
true.
It.
We really did.
But we did it with a video camera a lot of the time, which I think is kind of, like, if we were doing it today, if we were in a band today, it would be easy to throw on the laptop and just, like, record shit. But it seemed like it was easier to throw on a video camera. And I don't really know why.
A tape deck, which had a record feature too, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you know, it would have been really hard at the time. I mean, this was 1995, six, like, to drag down the computer.
Yeah.
We didn't have the equipment to interface the amps with it directly, so we would have had to, like, position a mic in the room and just hope for the best.
Right, and
we probably did not have a good mic, so...
Yeah, no. I mean, that was what inevitably led us to try to record a demo tape in a studio, because I think we spent one rehearsal...
Wow.
Just trying to see what would happen if we just recorded one ourselves, and then we didn't like the sound.
Yeah,
of it.
we were thinking about being in the talent show. And the talent show, it's the funny thing about suburban high schools. Like, instead of like just having to go and play, and they would go, "Oh, we like you," they were like, "Submit a tape of your stuff." And it's like, well, how many crappy high school bands are recording a tape?
Yeah,
you know, except for Ed Rue and which we talked about in the very first Generation Goat, actually.
It's probably been that long since we've talked. We probably haven't mentioned it since.
Probably not. If we find the crumb tape, we will play some for you.
Oh, gosh. I never...
In the meantime, stick a fork in your blender.
Yeah. I actually think I did have a copy of that at one point. He had a copy, speaking of high school, and maybe we mentioned this way back on Goat Number 1, he had a copy, Ed Rue did, of almost every demo tape any band in our school put out.
We had some good bands. Like, to be fair, like, there were a few bands that didn't actually go on to do, you know, some stuff.
Yeah. Or members thereof went on and are still playing in little bands here and there. Yeah. So there was some talent out there.
We were a very musical high school. Not like Fame musical.
No.
Like the next best thing.
Yeah.
Like there were straight guys in our high school too.
There were.
Once in a while. It's true. It's a little crazy. Wow, this is a really boring goat.
I'm going to edit that out. No, now I can't because I commented on it.
No, I just, it's a boring goat in the sense that all I want to do is sit here and be like, who else was there in high school? Remember that one guy who did that one song?
Which guy did which song?
There was that guy, I think his name might have been Greg, and he was in Orpheus or something like that.
Yeah.
he did Fearless by Pink Floyd at the town show, which is why we started doing it in our band, and it was just, like, the coolest performance I'd ever seen.
Oh, the guitar player, I think, was Jake. Darn it. So Greg was the drummer. The only reason I remember that Greg wouldn't have been the guitar player is because I know Greg was the drummer.
Write in, folks, if you've met either of these people.
Yeah.
Say sorry.
And I don't. Paul maybe was the bass player. I don't know. Actually, those guys were all in my grade. Yeah. Thanks. Fuck you.
Chris is two grades ahead of me. You see. Although I'm falling apart faster.
Well, I'm not two grades ahead of you anymore because you continued.
I'm in the 22nd grade.
Right. Right. And I stopped at the. I can't do math. I stopped. Well, no, I did a master's degree, so at the 18th.
Yeah.
All right, I can't do math.
Actually, I'm in the 23rd grade now, so rock on.
Yeah, so you're ahead of me.
That's right. So it's funny, actually, I guess we won't be doing a St. Patrick's Day episode this year. And I think we missed commenting on our anniversary.
We did.
So it would have been our 2-year anniversary this year, and I think we missed talking about it.
Yeah.
I'm 2 years of this crap.
2 years of this, and we're up to episode 20.
That should be our new slogan. 2 years of this crap.
2 years of this crap.
Well, I mean, 24 months in 2 years, 20 episodes. It roughly works out.
Yeah.
It's just not, like, you know, very evenly spaced.
Right, no. Because we'll get on a tear sometimes. We'll do, like, you know, a couple months in a row or a couple in 1 month.
I mean, you know, the thing is, this crap is just so boring. And, you know, it's just, God.
But, stop saying it's boring. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy.
That's right. I'm working on it. So, what do you got going on? Like, what's going to happen now that you're considering updating your webpage again?
You know, one thing I've been thinking, and I might do a Geek Force 5 cast about this later in the week. One thing I've been thinking about is...
About our podcast? Dude.
No, not about our
podcast.
A podcast about our podcast.
That would be funny.
No. I in terms of what I've got going on, like, some of the features that I introduced, I don't know if it was late last year or early this year, where I kind of introduced, like, 5 different features for Geek Force 5. Some of them are easier to pull off, and some of them are hard to pull off. And you'll notice that, like, the 5 list, which was my Monday feature, has happened, like, 2 times. The interview, which is on Thursdays, the 5 questions, has worked out pretty well, although I keep forgetting to build up a sort of backlog of them. And I keep thinking that, like, my students and I read this piece the other day, and this is what I might talk about on a 5 cast.
Spoiler.
That where the thing was, and I've actually tried to record this podcast 2 or 3 times, and my equipment keeps fucking up. But the idea being that we use different parts of our brain when we speak as opposed to when we write.
It's true. I can point to them.
But we're doing a podcast, so that wouldn't help anybody except me. All right. So I kind of want the writing part of my brain back to write things, to write some short stories, to write some whatever. I mean, part of the reason that... Geek Force 5 posts fell off in February was because I was using that creative part of my brain to write lyrics and write music. So I might be doing more 5 casting, which I don't really think of as a podcast so much as just sort of like what people on Tumblr do.
Sure.
With sort of an audio post. And it's easier to get done, and I have it on my phone and whatever. So I might be doing more of that.
That's cool.
But we'll see. How about you?
I've been trying to gather some steam with Listen. At one point I had considered changing the name, took some votes, took some suggestions. I've registered the alternative name, and I'm still sort of thinking about it. It's kind of ironic I did it because I thought, well, you know, it might be hard for people to remember or look up, and then I had my biggest traffic day in like 18 months the next day, and I go, well, I guess it's working out. And
yeah.
The submissions keep coming in, so clearly people are finding it.
Right.
So there's a whole brand identity thing, but you know, I've got a lot of features coming up. I just posted about a band called Balto, which I wrote about this guy Philippe, who was in a band called Hip Hatchet, or still is rather, from Vermont, and he plays on this record. His friend sent in thing, and it's amazing. It was, it's also on Bandcamp,
yeah,
the Balto record, and so essentially the guy had a job in Moscow, decided to quit his job and then go off into Siberia and like just check out people and life, wow, and stuff. And so the whole album is kind of stuff that was either kind of about or inspired by that journey. And he came back and recorded the whole thing in New York in like a day, with six friends. And it's amazing. Like the first track, it's got a very Fleet Foxes kind of thing, and it's very well produced. And yeah, I really enjoyed it. And it's like $4 or $5. It's really cheap on Bandcamp. Yeah. It's a full album. It's really good. So. So I'm excited to be doing more features because I'm getting some really great content.
Yeah.
I've only actually ever really gotten one submission where I was like, ooh. And it was like a crappy high school band. It's like we sent in something. And I, like sitting on the other end of it, I was like, I want to encourage these people, but I have nothing positive to say at this point other than keep at it.
Right.
Good for you.
Yeah.
So I kind of just didn't respond. And I feel kind of bad about that, but it's something I really grapple with on a page, honestly, because sometimes I get submissions and they're good, but I don't have anything to add to the conversation.
Right.
You know? And, like, I understand that all they really want is, like, press. And I get that. You know, like, maybe they want a review, but they probably just want the press.
Cause yeah.
That's what most people want, like, when they're starting out. And so I always feel kind of torn. Like, well, I want to put it up because it's not objectionable, but then I have nothing to say other than it's good.
Yeah, that's rough.
Gold star, you know, and so I'm trying to think of a way to, and this is a really long answer. A while ago, I created the music for a rainy day section, and the idea was that I bookmark stuff all the time where I'm like, oh, this is really good.
Yeah.
And then I just never get around to writing a featured post because it's just PhD or whatever, and just crap happens. So I created it, so I was like, okay, throw the band in there and be like, hey, this is a random thing, it's really good, go check it out.
Yeah.
Whatever. So I keep thinking, like, maybe I'm going to shunt some of these posts into that. So
right.
We'll see what happens. But the other thing, which I guess we talked about a little, not necessarily here, but Songs That Save Your Life is where I started. That's still in the description of this podcast. It's, you know, it's something that I really like. I like the idea of. It's very much like something from, like, cassette from my ex, but we did it first. And you know, it's something that I always kind of imagined that people would stop by and tell their stories, and some people have, and a lot of people do it in the comments, and it was great, but it's kind of been sitting there. And you know, I want to get it going again, so I might change the layout. I might do like a post a month, and maybe come up with a theme, or, you know, come up with a very easy way for people to post their own kind of stories and reactions, and you know, have a prompt. And in a way, I thought about combining that. My friend Mike Fournier, who, if you guys don't know who Mike Fournier is, well, one of you does. He wrote a book for the 33 and the Third series on the Minutemen, on Double Nickels on the Dime, and it's a great book. Go check it out. But what he had a music blog for a while, and what he decided to do was he took a year and he went through his whole catalog, and he just talked about, he kind of reviewed the discs and he kind of talked about why he had them and where they came from. And I thought, well, that's kind of what my site does.
Yeah.
You know, in a way. And in the absence of sometimes not having a burning story to tell, that's a really nice prompt. So I might start doing something like that in a section on the new songs, which I'm, the site came out in April, 2007, I think. Maybe 2007. So I thought, you know, it might be a nice way, and it's kind of 4th anniversary to relaunch.
Yeah.
Let's see where it is. So that's my big project. But of course now I'm rewriting my PhD for resubmission. So I want to get it done. I'm going to try to get it done, and we'll talk about it probably on another podcast before it happens. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it sounds, I've always really liked that site, and I like the stories that are there.
I'm really proud of some of them.
Yeah.
I really am. Actually.
And I think your idea of using prompts is a really good one, because I think it's, I mean, I wouldn't have, not I, but Mr. Trash wouldn't have done the new album if it weren't for the prompt of the RPM challenge. And I wouldn't be thinking about new short stories if it weren't for, there's a deadline coming up on March 31st for this collection called Live Free or Die, Die, Die. it's a they did one last year called Live Free or Undead, about monsters and zombies and such, and this one's about Pulp Fiction. So I think prompts are really good really good tool.
And no, definitely.
And Mike's idea is cool.
Actually, you suggested that I, you know, consider interviewing people, like, about their experiences with music. And I think actually that's kind of a good idea. And I know a few people who, you know, maybe have said that they would help out but didn't want to write their own posts that would probably respond to something like that. So that might be a way to go, too.
Yeah, I mean, because I think I would go to, like, New Hampshire Media Makers and stuff and say, look, I'm looking for guest people, and only very rarely get any respondents. Yeah. But the moment I said, I'm looking for interviews, people came out of the woodwork.
Yeah, it's a good idea. I should go to one of those and do the same thing.
Yeah, and then the next one is this weekend, and I have my daughter's 5th birthday party.
Stupid children.
I know. I always miss the one in February the last couple of years because of my nephew's birthday, and I always miss the one in March because of my daughter's birthday. And then I finally get back into the groove in April.
Teach her an important life lesson. Daddy won't always be around. You just come to me, makers. Wow, 5th birthday, man.
Yeah.
What are you going to do for a cake? I think on my 5th birthday, I rocked a Carvel cake.
I don't know. You know, I haven't thought about that. There have been a couple years where I specifically made the cake myself. And then other years, the hell with that. She goes back and forth in her sort of obsession about Harry Potter. And this year, she's back to it. She wants a Harry Potter birthday. So we've got various
rock on
plates and the sort of different things, including Harry Potter silly bands,
nice.
Which I didn't think they made, but apparently they do.
Nice.
We my wife and her, Stephanie and Kaylee, went out and went so nuts that they bought paper invitations, and I was kind of like, we're so late on the preparation for this that us kind of, this really kind of ceremonial, the paper invitations, because anyone that we're going to invite, by email.
Kids like getting paper invitations.
Yeah. So she handed them out at school. Yeah. And she's only going to be, because we're doing it at our house, she's only going to be able to invite a select few. So those, they kind of end up being like Wonka golden tickets. Like, here, you get to go to the party.
Sorry, other kids who take care. I guess you suck.
I think probably my wife has more tact than I do and handed them out to the parents.
It's like when you're in grade school and like the Valentine's Day rolls around, right?
Yeah.
And like, some teachers are like, everybody bring enough for the whole class. But then like other teachers I had, like you'd spend all this time, like usually with like a brown paper bag, and you like decorate your brown paper bag and tape it to the front of your desk as like your little mailbox.
Right.
And then, you know, like people would put Valentine's in there, and like you'd see other kids opening them, and then you'd be like, "What up? My mailbox fall. Maybe they fell on the floor."
I remember that. I think most of my elementary school teachers were fairly on the side of everyone has to bring enough for everyone.
Yeah.
And we've talked about it previously. My favorite Valentine's Day memory, it was of middle. I think it was a middle school thing, maybe an early high school thing. The
CompuDate.
Yeah, the CompuDate thing. We did that a couple years ago.
It's true.
Or last year. Yeah.
Jesus. God damn. Yeah, no, it's true. Those things were fun, but Valentine's Day also caused me to make a rookie mistake, which I've also talked about in this podcast. You never, ever, ever, if you're in second grade. If you're in second grade listening to this podcast, I'll tell you something. If you want to ask somebody out, do not write down, will you be my boy/girlfriend? Yes, no, maybe. You take out the no and the maybe. You just leave the yes on the form. That's a rookie mistake.
Rookie mistake.
She was like, no, and I was like, I'll kill you. Then I had to go to a new school. But, yeah.
Yeah, I think we did a whole episode right around Valentine's Day, so I'm not going to rehash my Valentine's Day stories.
It's all good.
Needless to say, my wife and I got together like 2 days after Valentine's Day.
Alright.
You know. And speaking of, like, our 10th anniversary is coming up. Is that fucking weird?
That's weird. I was at your wedding.
Yeah. We drove by the hotel, not where the wedding was at, but the hotel where everyone stayed. Well, not
strange
everyone stayed.
Strange things went on in that hotel. Strange things.
Which we're not going to talk about on this podcast.
We're probably not going to talk about it. Suffice it to say that the wedding party after you guys went away, which was very weird, man. Like, as after the wedding, we're all at the hotel. You guys have a room. Like, there is an expectation here. And you're hanging out at the bar with us till, like, 11:30. It's like,
I don't think it was that late.
It was late.
Was it that late?
Like, dude, they're closing. Shouldn't you guys be not here? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, we
you guys weren't in the limo that long, so shouldn't you be elsewhere? And it was very odd, but you finally left, and then like I went with the rest of the wedding party back to somebody's room. That got weird. That got weird and uncomfortable very quickly.
Yeah, well, you know.
Like, why are you guys putting towels under the door?
Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah, we have those friends.
Is Snoop Dogg here, or is it, we just preparing the way? What's going on? Is this like Gozer? We have to just lay out all this smoke?
Oh, Snoop Dogg.
Good times.
Yeah.
Slightly weird, but good times.
But that hotel is now like closed or something, right?
Apparently, I don't know. Like, the word was they closed for repairs, and then they just decided not to open.
Yeah. It's a thing. Things closing down. Like, we and the other thing we drove by on the way over here, and like, have we even said we're in the same room? Like,
oh yeah, that right. doesn't yeah. We'll be...
but yeah, so on the way over here, we also drove by the old Route 3 Cinema, yeah. which factors into a number of.
That's true. I can't believe it's gone, man.
My stories, yeah, and it's gonna be a shop and stop. A Stop and Shop.
That's true.
It's just...
I probably had my first like serious high school crush on someone because of Route 3 Cinema.
Because of Route 3. I hung out with one of my two dates with my second girlfriend were at the Route 3 Cinema.
I don't remember seeing a lot of specific movies there. You know, it's weird because I'm sure I went there at least 100 times. And like, I remember seeing Pet Sematary.
Yeah.
And Ken and I went to see Pet Sematary 2, which was in 3D. What did we have to... Oh, one time, too, we all wanted to go see something, but it was rated R. And this was, like, back in the day, like you'd buy your ticket right at the window, and then the ticket taker would be right there, but then you'd go into the theater, and there were just no more ticket takers.
Right.
So, like, we bought tickets to see Speed Zone, I think it was called, which was, like, a PG dumb movie, and then, like, we all just went in the other room. Like, haha, we're the bad kids. And,
I recall very few... I recall seeing The Lion King there, which is a pretty important... And I didn't want to see it. We were hanging out at the comic book store.
Chris doesn't go in for cutesy poppy things.
No, not at all. We were hanging out at the comic book store, and my family decided we were all going to go see a movie, and they dragged me out of the comic book store, and we all went and saw The Lion King, and it turned out to be my favorite movie of all time.
Wow.
And
still?
Well, I mean, there are a couple of more grown-up movies that are now sort of almost supplanting it, but it came out the summer before my grandfather passed away, and there's the whole... those two things sort of end up being inextricably linked in my brain. So I saw that there, and Private Parts I remember seeing there. And I do remember going to see... I'm sure I've told this story in the podcast before. Johnny Mnemonic there, and I got all the kids in to the R-rated movie.
Nice.
And then me and the two friends I was with left and went back to their one of their parents' houses and watched Hard Day's Night instead.
Nice.
while her little brother and all of his friends continued to watch Johnny Mnemonic.
Well played, sir.
Yeah.
I kind of miss that place. I mean. I don't know why it couldn't have lived on as, like, a local budget movie theater, like the one in Salem or Danvers or whatever.
Yeah, I mean...
Hollywood Hits, right?
That's right. What it's called, or the one in, well, it never would have been as sort of upper class as the one in The Fighter in, what is it, Lexington?
Lexington flick.
Yeah, where they go to. But, I mean, it could have been... I don't know. Maybe because it's suburbia and we don't sort of... there's no real... It's not attached to, like, a downtown area. You can't really walk to it. I mean, I think those things, they have a hard time surviving anywhere. There are places in New Hampshire I know. I have friends who have fought hard to get those things to stay alive. It's one thing when it's part of, like, a downtown area. It's another thing when it's sort of off.
Yeah, it's true. So rest in peace, Route 3.
Yes, rest in peace.
So, yeah, so that's... I don't know. Is that a goat?
I think that's a goat.
Did we do it?
Yeah, I think we did.
You guys are free to go. It's all right. We're just going to talk for a couple minutes, but if you want to stay after, whatever.
You know, you can hang out, listen to whatever Snoop Dogg song we throw at the end here.
Yeah, I don't know. What should we? I think we should go the other way. I think we should throw in Still by Dr. Dre. Because that's featuring Snoop. So.
I don't know if I remember that one.
Well, I think that's the way to go.
I think that might mean that I have to go buy a Dr. Dre.
Well, since we're being all nostalgic, I mean, you know, we'll just throw in the Still Hitting the Corners and then Lolo's Girl. Well, I don't have a low rider. Not really. My car's a lot lower to the ground than it used to be, but I don't think that's like a real...
No, I don't think so.
Although I kind of wonder. I mean, it's not like most cars are really high off the ground.
No.
Like, is there a cutoff for the Lowrider? Does anybody know?
That'd be good to.
Can we get research on that?
Yeah, where's our intern?
Damn it! Come on, stuff plague rat. Let's go. I have a plague rat puppet. We're just watching this podcast right now.
Very disinterested.
He's our research.
Yeah.
He came from Shakespeare's Globe Theater. I think that's great for the kids.
I think that's a plague rat.
It's a plague rat hand puppet. That rocks.
That does rock.
It's seriously well done. So, all right. Well, thanks for listening to Generation Goat.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Allegedly, we're going to podcast again this month. But
don't
hold your breath. There might be something April Fool's Day.
There might be. We should try to get one more in March. I think that would be a good goal.
All right. So, remember, complaints go to Chris.
Right.
And
I suck. Yeah. And that's all there is to it. All
right. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.
Bye.
Yeah.